You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds. I am Mags, and with me today, as always, my son, Carlos. Carlos, not under the table.
Oh, I'm not too bad, are you?
Didn't ask. So, we've just watched last night's event, UFC Fight Night, Overeem versus Harris, the last of this Jacksonville trilogy. Let's just quickly run through these prelims. Rodrigo Nascimento Ferreira picked up the second round sub against Dontale Mayes. Courtney Casey on carrying on that winning streak, picking up the win in the first round sub against Mara Romero Barella. Darren Elkins picked up the decision against Nate Landwehr, and then Giga Chikadze
got... Oh, no, he didn't.
Oh, sorry, I apologise. Nate Landwehr picked up the decision against Darren Elkins. Then Giga Chikadze picked up the decision against a very late replacement in Erwin Rivera. Anthony Hernandez got cleaned out in 39 seconds by Kevin Holland. And then a really good result for Miguel Baeza. This was a real back and forward fight. He got a second round knockout against the immortal Matt Brown. So going into the five rounds on the main card, the five fights on the main card, apologies, started with Song Yadong, one of our favourite fighters. He took on Marlon Vera. This was a really, really good fight. I really enjoyed watching this. Started quite back and forward, really. Vera started with some leg kicks. Yadong answered back with his own kind of leg kicks. It felt like that Vera was trying to use his length to keep out of Yadong's kind of pocket, because we all know Yadong's got that vicious power for such a light division. He's got some real knockout power. But Yadong quickly kind of found his range and found a way to get inside Vera's distance and was getting some really good shots off, really powerful. But Vera did do well to try and keep him at bay in that first round with the leg kicks. Then Yadong started to go into the body, and that's when it kind of started opening up and we started seeing more shots, and they really just started throwing hell for leather, to be fair. Yadong got Vera up near the fence at the end, which was quickly reversed, and then Vera landed a couple of elbows and knees to see out the round. First round, I thought it was quite even. I think Yadong threw probably the more shots, but I think Vera did the more damage, so I would have probably given that round slightly to Yadong. Second round, it was kind of a lot of the same. Vera caught a kick and landed a good combination to attack Yadong. This is where they both kind of like opened up more. Vera was really using those kicks with he landed a really good body kick. Yadong was started to like really open up with those punches. I gave the second round to Yadong. I felt he kind of came out of his shell in that second round and found his range and was really able to weave in and out of that defence of Vera. Third round, I give to Vera. I thought Vera came out and did really well. He cut up Yadong in this round, made him bleed from the nose. He came with some really crisp like 1-2 combinations. Whilst Yadong was still quite active and quite landing his own shots, I think that Vera's were the harder shots. He landed a great knee and got some double underhooks, pinned Yadong up against the fence. Then he dragged him down to the floor where he got inside Yadong's guard. But good ground game by Yadong meant he could scramble to his feet. But they both then landed a pair of elbows at the same time. Yadong tried to end the round with a takedown, which got stuffed. Then Vera got onto the back of Yadong, but Yadong again with a great takedown defense, flips and gets back up right near the death. You don't try the cartwheel kick. I know Vera tried the cartwheel kick, which didn't connect, and that was the end. I gave the fight to Vera. I thought he had a good, solid second and third round, but the judges didn't see it my way, and they give it a unanimous 29-28 all across the board to Yudong. Carlos, what do you think about this?
I think the fight as itself was a spectacular fight. They both put on a brilliant performance. Song Yudong, like you said, for a guy who knew that he had that he didn't have the reach advantage, and he also knew with a shorter guy there the longer legs.
But he had the more power.
Well, yeah, he had the more power, and he knew that he had to get into the pocket of their attacks to do damage, and he did that. He did that well, trying to get into the pocket. Now, as well as saying that, it's also a sort of a fighting tale of when you're fighting a striker who's a more dominant striker than you, mix your game up, throw a couple of takedowns in there, and then pick your shots off, because as you throw a couple of takedowns in there, the striker thinks twice before throwing them shots, like, just loosely, because he doesn't know if you're going to shoot for another takedown. So even if it means that you look like you're shooting for a takedown, and then you don't execute it, and you just get a couple of shots off, it makes that striker think twice before actually getting all of his shots off. Same as what Song Dong, what the fuck's he called?
Ding Dong.
Song Dong, whatever. His name's a tongue twister. But yeah, he knew that he needed to get into the pocket to do damage, and also get into the pocket so Vera couldn't get any kicks off. But then again, as well, Vera knew if he were to get into the pocket of Dong, I'm fucking getting this.
Yudong.
Song Yudong. He knew that if he tied him up, he knew that Dong wouldn't be able to get them big power shots off. So it were more of two martial artists who were equaling each other out, but it were a perfect bout because none of them were just staying still. None of them were actually allowing the other fighter to take more of the fight. They were both battling it out. But for me, Vera did more in the first round and going into the third. And even though it was a very close fight, for me, Vera just did the more. And I was scoring that fight in his favour, to be honest with you. But obviously the judges give it to Dong, which is, in a way, fair enough. Because like I say, it was a very, very close fight. Obviously everyone judges the fight differently. Mm-hmm. For me, why I judge the fight is because Rivera did get, quote me wrong, but he did get that two takedowns in the fight, and that's what did it for me. Even though Dong were the more powerful guy, and he basically hurt Rivera. Rivera was still fighting back. He didn't hurt him to an extent where Rivera was like basically like backing up most of the fight. Fair enough. He hit him a couple of times where it got Rivera giving respect and like, oh, maybe he's not as like tired and he can knock me out. Not sort of at will, but if I get too cocky, if you will. But he was a better martial artist for me in that fight with Vera. Unfortunately, the judges didn't see it that way and he didn't get the win. But that's the case on some of the fights on this card.
Yeah. The judges don't do it themselves. I mean, like you said, it's very subjective, but there's some blatant, like, really bad calls by the judges on this card for me anyway.
Well, that's it. But congrats to both of these guys. And they're all, every fight at this point is just trying to do the same thing, just trying to get onto a fight just to get a bit of money because yeah, they've not been able to fight for so long.
Yeah.
But either way, so it's win, lose or draw. Everyone who fights on these last three cards are all winners. Mm-hmm. First of all, they're all going to go down in a bit of history after this obviously horrible pandemic. But they're still going to be known as the first people to come back and like combat athletes to get the fight game going again.
Yep, absolutely. Next we'll go into the was it the middleweights, I think, with Eric Anders against Christoph Jocko. I just wasn't entertained by this fight, I don't think. Jocko picked up the unanimous decision, and quite rightly, I think he was just the better fighter all around. We started the first round with a kind of a feeling out process, as we tend to do. There were a lot of time spent with like leg kicks and kind of like testing your range style jabs. But the whole story of this fight was Anders only having one kind of game plan, which was go in with a quick shot and then try and take Jocko to the ground. Now, it wasn't working from the beginning of the fight, and it ended up being a case of where Anders was kind of like trying to smother Jocko on the fence. But Jocko, to his credit, quickly changed his game plan up and was able to escape that quite a lot and then get pepper off a few of his own shots. And basically, that was the story of the whole fight, where it was Anders coming forward, Jocko getting caught, pinned against the fence, coming away, landing a couple of shots, and kind of like dodging and weaving. And I think that's why I agree with the judges on this, that they give the decision to Jocko, because he saw that he wasn't going to be able to strike with this guy. Basically, head on head, he was definitely not going to be able to wrestle with him, because Anders was such a big middleweight. He must have been 20, 30 pounds heavier than Jocko when he come to fight time. So there was no way that Jocko was going to win a ground-based game. So Jocko changed his game plan up and landed his shots and got in and out, which was a great kind of tactic. My only issue with him was he was backing up so much that he kind of... he looked like he was running a lot of the fight, which could have easily gone against him in the judge's decision. You look at that, where he's been stalked by Anders and then being pinned against the cage quite a lot. That octagon control can be the difference maker when it comes to the judges. But fair play to Jocko. Picks up the victory, and yeah, it was a nothing fight. Both of them looked like they could have actually just gone again.
Yeah, that was it. Like you're saying, Anders did switch up his game plan. Once he tried to shoot him for the double. If he didn't get the double, went for the single. If he didn't get that, it were...
smother against the cage.
Yeah, it were clinch work, and Christoph did well to not go to the ground and basically just have good wrestling defence. Now, I know he said something at the end of the fight, that basically like he tried to finish him in the second, but he was just like hugging his legs in the fight. But at the end of the day, in that sense, it wasn't... Christoph were doing well to not go to the ground, so there were plenty of times where they both could have done something in them exchanges, and they didn't. Going to Anderson's corner when they said, when his corner shouted out, he basically can sweep him at will, like leg sweep him at will, and they were like, no, he can't, he clearly can't. Yeah. He's tried to like take him down that fast.
That made me giggle, that.
And he can't do it.
And he was saying, and then Jocko was walking along the cage to try and escape, and Anders' coach was saying, yeah, just walk him, as if he was, as Anders doing that, and it wasn't, it was literally Jocko.
Yeah, like you're saying, this was just like, on this card, it was like a nothing fight. Like, for me, it doesn't do anything for Christoph, bar from it puts him in a bit more confident position. I think he's on like a 3-fight win streak now, but since I think like 2017, 2018, I think he fought like 3 or 4 times and he didn't pick up one win.
Yeah.
And then he was supposed to fight, then he obviously did fight twice again. He's picked up the 2 victories. Then he was supposed to fight Anders before, it got cancelled. He's fought him now. But his last fights have all been decisions. Now, in that middleweight division, like you're saying, I'm not saying this proves it's sort of like a nothing fight, but in that heavyweight division, in that middleweight division, if you're not sort of like a spectacular fighter who's doing, not just doing well, but sort of finishing your opponents and making them look spectacular, you're not going to get a big name or a big push.
No.
It's like, at the end of the day...
There's killers. At the top of that middleweight division, there's absolute killers.
Well, that's it. In Christoph's last 3 fights now, yeah, he might have got a 3-fight win streak, but they're all decisions. Mm-hmm. And in that... like I say, I can't remember his last 2, I'm going to have to go back and watch him. But in that fight last night, it didn't look impressive. Because all he was doing was, yeah, fair enough, his boxing were there, his accuracy were there, his speed, timing, and his wrestling defence were there, but he wasn't doing anything to actually say to me he'd be a good contender in that weight class. Now, that's not to say if he stays on winning ways and he evolves his game and gets better, everyone can do that, but that's just a case of if. And that's easy to say when you're saying it about someone, but it's the fact that you've got to go and do that. And yeah, it can Christoph basically take his game to that next level and step his fight IQ up to compete with these top contenders.
Yeah, it's definitely a step up. I mean, I've got the UFC official rankings here, and now I know that they change as and when UFC wants to kind of promote a fight rather than actual fighters. But looking at just the top 10, you've got the likes of Uriah Hall, Brunson, Gastelum, Hermanson, Till, Romero. These are all absolute murderers, and I don't think that this Christoph Jocko performance here would... He'd have no kind of game plan against these. He definitely needs to kind of go back to the drawing board. And the same for Anders. I mean, Anders has got a lot of potential. I mean, he's a massive, massive middleweight. But he needs to realise when a game is not working, switch it up. And if he obviously had the power, because when he landed shots, you could see that it was worrying Jocko, but he just didn't land enough shots. He didn't throw enough shots.
The one thing about Anderson's problem is at middleweight for me is he's just a big middleweight. Like for me,
reminds me of Darren Till.
It looks like he should be fighting at light heavyweight, and he's trying to cut that weight and go down because he carries a lot of body fat with him. Now if he were to turn that body fat into more muscle, or even just lean down a little bit, his speed will get better. Mm-hmm. He'll get a better fight. Now
his cardio will be better.
Well, that's it. Well, he's got like what 9 fights in the UFC now, and I know he has this like attitude of like at some point he'll get wiser and smarten up his game. But you're in the UFC, fair. You can think like that if you're in these other organisations. But when you're in that murderous row of killers, if you think like that, you're going to end up just getting knocked out all the time. You're just going to go in there and just basically like be a money bag for someone who's just going to come in and go, right, I know I'm going to beat this guy because he's basically a sacrificial lamb to anyone that's willing to fight. Yeah. When you fight in an organisation like the UFC, like Bellator, like ONE, even like Bellator and ONE that are rising up, these are like a murderer's row divisions. And if you go in there, then fight, thinking to yourself like, oh, it's just like another paycheck, or it's just this, or it's just that. You're gonna pay the price very quick, and you don't want to be doing that. And for me, it's, like I say, Anderson needs to. I would say his fight game is there. His takedowns, his bit of his boxing. He just, for me, it's his fitness more than all. He needs to get that a bit more worked on. And I say it'd be a bit more sharp with his hands. We've seen him leaner before in his fights, and he has been quicker. And in that fight against, and it could put it well down to not being able to train properly with everything that's going on. But yeah, either way, it were a good performance off Christoph not being able to get tucked down off someone who were clearly a lot heavier than him.
Yep. Now let's go into easily the best fight on the card. And we knew it was going to be as soon as the fight was announced. Edson Barboza dropping down to featherweight against Dan Agger. Dan Agger's been on a bit of a tear. Just wow. Just this fight, it was just everything that you want in an MMA fight. Starts off Agger really, really bringing the pace. I mean, when you see fighters facing Barboza, they're normally worried. They're normally kind of tentative. Agi was not. He brought that fight to Barboza in that first 30 seconds, really landed him with some shots, but I think he kind of did himself a disservice because Barboza realised he could take them shots straight away, and Barboza just took his time, nice and calmly, landed 2 shots and knocked Agi to the floor straight away. He landed one crisp on the temple, and you could just see where it folds Agi. We thought instantly, game over. Barboza started to slam those hammer fists, and with having no crowd, we've said it for the last couple of shows, having no crowd, you can really hear the connection that they're making. They sounded so, so evil. Agi, great credit to him, was able to push Barbosa off and got back up, quickly regained his composure. To say he took some big brutal shots, he recovered really well, started throwing body kicks, but then he started eating those leg kicks and you could see where they were spinning him around. Then there was a lovely knee combination. Barbosa landed the leg kick and a punch, which cut the underneath the eye of Agui. But Agui did not take that line down. He came out with a flying knee and caused a massive welt on the cheek of Barbosa. It was just such a good back and forward first round. Just really, really good. I mean, Barbosa's leg kicks are just absolutely brutal. And after even the first round, you could see the red marks and the welts on Agui's legs. But fair play to him. They come back out in the second round. He did pretty much the same thing. Come out with the massive shots. And it just started being absolutely hell for leather. Barbosa ended up with a cut on his nose. Agui's cut over his cheek started bleeding. And they just started pounding the absolute living piss out of each other. Grabbed each other. I think Barbosa got hold of the tie clinch whilst they were up against the fence. Landed a couple of knees. Barbosa with a... Agui landed a couple of combos. And it was, like we said, it was just tit for tat. Just absolutely wanted to beat the living piss out of each other. Near to the end of the second round, Agui actually drags Barbosa to the floor, postured up. Barbosa did really well to keep that butterfly and basically stop Agui getting into his guard, but they were still able to land some great shots. Third round, a lot of the same. These guys were absolute beasts. I could have watched this for six rounds. It was just such a great fight. A lot of the same kind of things. There were overhand right that Agui threw, which just about got blocked. Barbosa started backing up, and you could see that Barbosa realised that Agui wasn't there for the taking. This wasn't just a gimme fight in this division. He's come down thinking, or maybe hoping, that it was going to kind of dominate, and Agui was having none of it. It was like, this is my division, bitch. You're not coming down here to take over. And that was the end of the fight. And the decision went to Agui. I think it was I would have said it was a fair decision, to be fair. Good victory for Agui. A massive name on his win column there. And Barbosa kind of has done the Jose Aldo of dropping down the division, thinking that you're gonna kind of make a big impact and not it not coming right for you. Just an absolute gem of a fight to watch. Carlos, what did you think about it?
Well, let's just throw Barbosa's leg kicks out because he threw enough of them in the fight.
I mean, how many times did he spin Dan Agui around with them leg kicks?
Well, his leg kicks a day. What question the decision for me is, I say this were another very close fight on the card, but again, I had it scoring against Barbosa in his favour. And for me, it was just, fair enough, yeah, even though Agui were landing more shots, he was the faster guy. Because what people got to remember, this is the reason, this is his natural weight class. This is the first time Barbosa's gone down fighting at that weight. And it's not like he got absolutely battered. It reminded me of another war with Paul Felder. Mm-hmm. But Dan Agui did well to go out there, take the shots off Barbosa, recover when he did get hurt and get dropped. And the leg kicks as well, he weren't checking none of them, which sort of made me worry for him. But then also, he were able to take more leg kicks than I've saw a lot of people in the UFC take from Barbosa. The only guy who's got two leg kick KOs, mm-hmm. two leg kick TKOs in the UFC. There were more than a couple of times where Barbosa hurt Agui to the body as well. And like I said, when I was explaining to you, when Agui pulled guard, there's only a couple of times you pull guard, there's only a couple of reasons you pull guard. Either A, you've got a submission, you know you've got it, and you're going to be pulling guard because you need to execute it. B, you know you're better on the ground than your opponent and you're not worried about going onto your back, and it's more effort than it is trying to go for a takedown then pulling guard, so you do it. Or you know that you're getting beat on your feet by your opponent and these shots are fucking hurting you, and the only thing you can do is, if you've got hold of them, pull guard. And to me, that's what I saw Dan Agui pulling guard. He just couldn't, fair to his, he took a lot of shot from Barbosa, but he just He just he knew when enough were enough. He couldn't take any more of them. And in that third round, that's what probably gave it to the judges. What probably what swung it in his favour, because I don't know what he were able to do or what his coach said to him, but he were able to turn something on that sort of made his pain tolerance go up and made him refocus and just get a bit more wits about himself in the fight. But when he were going for the takedowns, and Barbosa were able to defend him cleanly, apart from that one that he got, and even with the one that he got, Barbosa was still defending on the ground and still basically bided his time until the end of the round. And he didn't really do much damage to Barbosa whilst he were on the ground. If anything, Barbosa did more damage to him when he did knock him down with an amethyst when Agui were on his back. But like I said, it was a very close fight, so again, it's going to be another one that the fans and everyone talked about. Another fight that the UFC can easily go back on Tuesday when they have the meeting and just go, right, well, we've got a couple of fights on this card that we can possibly rebook straight away because of the way they've gone.
Yeah.
Possibly, I'm not saying they will do. But, yeah, again, Barbosa can't take anything that sour from this. It's like, end of the day, it's going down to... It's not like he's gone up a division where he's got sort of like the speed advantage. He's going down, which means he's going to be having to cut more weight, which he's going to be having to feel the impact of walking around, not being able to get the nutrition he were able to get at 155, not being able to have the energy he had at 155, not being able to like sort of feel as healthy as he did at 155. Even though sometimes he cut the weight to get down to that division, he's cut an extra 10 pounds to get down to 145. Now, he's fighting a natural 145 in Danaghi. Danaghi's been at that weight class forever. I think for most of his career, I think all of his career. And he fought a well-rounded and a tough Danaghi last night. And he can't take anything out of it. He went down the weight class. He's got the fight IQ to know that he wouldn't have had the speed advantage, knew that Danaghi would have had it, but he definitely had the power advantage, and he just wasn't able to for me, sometimes get the read on Danaghi every time he was shooting in. Like I say, he dropped him, he hurt him a couple of times, but that's because Barbosa is a quality fighter, but Danaghi was just, his speed would just sort of put, for me when I was watching it, Danaghi's speed just sort of put Barbosa's like, kicking game off, because we didn't really see him throw a lot of kicks, and that's one of another thing about if someone's throwing a lot of kicks, they can only throw them a lot of kicks when you're still, and that sort of Barbosa's game, that's why his leg kicks are vicious, because he knows if he hurts you with a couple of them leg kicks, instead of throwing big volume of leg kicks, if he hurts you with a couple of them, he'll stop you in your tracks, which means then he can start throwing a good amount of volume of body kicks and hard roundhouse kicks and stuff. So that's his game plan. And if Danaghi did the perfect one to come in there and able to move about the octagon and not stay in a position where he were able to stay in the centre where Barbosa were able to fire them shots off down the barrel and able to get him. Because there were a couple of shots where Barbosa had tried to do for a spinning back kick to the body, and Danaghi did the perfect thing. He were already moving whilst Barbosa threw it. So there was no way we were going to land it because he were already moving. So as Barbosa actually full on extended it and threw it, Danaghi were already well out the way. So that's another way to defend against someone who throws not just fucking lethal kicks, but a good amount of kicks. So again, all in all, it was definitely the best fight on the card tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. After that, we went into the co-main event. Claudia Gadea taking on Angela Hill in the women's strawweight division. Gadea trying to get herself back to title contention. First round, I think this was the Gadea show. It started off with Hill missing a couple of shots, but then going for a takedown, which is against someone with the jiu-jitsu skills of Claudia Gadea is ridiculous. But luckily for Hill, Gadea just shoved her away and landed her knee. Eventually, Gidea did start going for her own takedown, and you could see how hard it took for Hill to try and defend the takedown. And eventually, she did have to succumb because Gidea just switched it to a single leg, got the takedown, and she went straight into side control. And Hill looked like a scared, wounded animal, but like she didn't have a clue what she was doing. She ended up being on the ground for the best part of the round, basically, and just was taking peppered with shots and Gidea trying to work for a submission. Hill did try to spin out, which was fair play to her, but then she ended up with her arm being trapped by Gidea's legs, kind of like a crucifix, and Gidea just had free rein to punch the ever-loving piss out of Hill's face. Luckily, Hill was able to get up against the fence and the round ended. But fair play to Angela Hill. She came out of that second round a totally kind of different fighter. She knew that she'd made mistakes in that round, and she did well to rectify them. She landed a beautiful elbow quite early on in the round and sliced Gidea's face wide open. Then she floored Gidea with a quick right, but instead of like diving on to basically ground and pound, she knew that Gidea was dangerous on the floor, so she just led her back up. But this was silly on Hill's part, because it gave Gidea the chance to recover. Gidea went for a takedown, but Hill learned to basically not be took down, because otherwise it was going to be same kind of story as the first round. So all in all, Hill did really well to kind of switch up her game plan and avoid going to the ground with Gidea, where Gidea would have been really dangerous, and use her better a better striking game to her advantage. And she, for me, the second round she kind of leveled up that card. So going into the third, it was pretty much anybody's fight. I thought that Hill was really, really good in that third round. I felt she had the better energy. She had the harder shots. Gidea did land a couple of good kicks and a couple of good power shots, but you could see the damage coming on Gidea's face from Angela Hill's straights and her jabs. Her eye really started to swell up over her right eye. I felt that Hill's footwork and shots and the way she was just in and out and keeping Gidea off the ground and basically making a stand and bang with her, I felt that Hill did well to win this fight. And it was another contentious judge's decision, where they give the fight to Gidea on a split. Carlos, what did you think about this fight? What do you think about the judge's decision?
Well, that's it. The judge's decision, it's like, this is the last fight. This is the last controversial fucking fight of the card going into the main event. But this was a bullshit decision from the judges. Claudia Gidea, fair enough. She didn't get knocked out, and she was able to fight her own game plan to an extent. It's just, Angela Hill has just been on a tear lately with her last three wins in that division. And the confidence she's been able to build up over the years is just unreal, and her boxing were on point in that fight. Her accuracy were on point, and the amount of damage and the output she were able to put on Claudia Gidea were unreal. And for the judges to score it in Claudia Gidea's favour, this is the fight when I watched it, I'm like, what the piss were them judges watching, like? Fair enough, yeah. There were times where Gidea were getting her own shots off, but Angela Hill clearly had a hurt most majority of the round. Mm-hmm. There were literally the biggest part in the round where Angela Hill's coaches were fucking shouting, let her up. One of the biggest indicators right there. I know people say don't listen to the corners, don't listen to the crowd, don't listen to stuff like that, but in that fight, in that principle, her coach is like basically saying the right thing. She's winning that fucking fight. At the end of the day, if you've hurt someone, don't let them stay on the back and taking shots to the stomach. If you've dropped them, let them get back up and carry on punching them in the eggs. You're going to hopefully do more damage and hopefully knock them out. But yeah, so I don't know what fight they were watching. It's Angela Hill was clearly the better stand-up fighter. Mm-hmm. She did well to not get took down in that fight, because Claudio Gadea, if that fight went to the ground, it I guarantee it would have gone in favour of Gadea, because she is the better grappler out of the pair of them. But the fight didn't go to the ground that often. They weren't grappling that much. It was literally Angela Hill for most majority of the bout punching Claudio Gadea in the face and making her look a mess. And I don't know exactly what... I don't know how they judged. I'm going to have to go back and watch that fight and
try and see what the judges saw.
Basically, yeah. But it's, for me, that were the biggest robbery on the card. But in all, the Angela Hill, she can't take that. I wouldn't see that as a loss. And I'd still be looking forward. I won't be looking back just because the judges did give it somebody else. Obviously, she's going to need to go back to the drawing board. There's no point in being salty about it. But I won't be happy about taking a step back. I'd still be wanting to move forward after this. Because even though it's not a win, it's still a learning curve. So I don't think she needs to switch up anything about her game plan, because the game plan were clearly working.
Yeah.
She says she's got good takedown defence against Claudia Gadea, who's very well rounded on the ground, and I say she won that fight for me, and like I say, that were a big robbery for Angela Hill.
Yeah, definitely. And just before going to the main event, the referee for this fight was Keith Peterson, who's been taking a lot of grief and even from us for his decision making recently. But I've got to give it to whoever made this parody account on Twitter about him. I implore you as a MMA fan to go and follow at KPetersonMMA, because someone's made a Keith Peterson parody account and it's absolutely hilarious. So definitely go and check that out. Right, let's get into this main event. A fight that really we didn't want to see happen, because for me, I don't think Walt Harris was ready to come back. The poor guy has had so much to deal with over the last year with the untimely death of his stepdaughter, Anaya Blanchard. But I can also understand him wanting to kind of put that out of his mind and get something to focus on. I just don't think a fight against Alistair Overeem was the way to go. Going actually into the fight, Harris started really, really fresh, to be fair. He did eat a spinning back kick to the stomach, but after that he threw a gorgeous head kick and combo, which was luckily blocked. But then he tagged Overeem, knocked him to the floor, and we thought it was all over, because he was absolutely being pounded on the ground by our Harris. Mergliotta, fair play to him, and this is why he's probably one of the better referees in the game. He could still see that Overeem was working to survive, and he gave him a lot of leeway there. Other referees probably would have called that fight over then. But Overeem was able to survive, went for the leg, which meant that Harris kind of like ran to escape. Overeem got back on his face, and you could see on his face that the wounds from the Rosenstruik fight had reopened back up. It was just a bloody mess. But then he went for a takedown, got the takedown, and this is where his skill set started to shine through. There was not really a lot that Harris could do when he got took to the ground. Overeem was clearly the better fighter. Harris was able to escape into half guard, but you could just see that he was absolutely breathing heavy up against that cage, kind of turtled up, and Overeem was over the top of him, trapping his arms, hitting him with shots, waiting till Harris's both his hands were off the ground to land a knee. You could just see at the end of this round, Harris was lucky to survive. Well, he was as lucky to survive as Overeem was as lucky to survive in the first 30 seconds. But Harris was absolutely gassed at the end of this round, and I think Overeem was quite tired as well. But Overeem being the more intelligent and obviously the more experienced fighter, he knew how to kind of manage his energy. Comes out in the second round, Overeem starts off quite explosive, really, but Harris was able to avoid that. But you could see where the pace had slowed. Another good combination by Overeem, and Harris was down on the floor, and this, it was the end of the fight. He Overeem was able to take the back, kind of flattened Harris out. And Harris was just getting rain shots onto the side of his head, and there was no defence. He was literally just covering his ears when he was taking shots in the ear, and then when Overeem was going to the body, he was covering the body, and Mergliotta again gave Harris a hell of a lot of leeway. He said to him, if you don't start defending, I'm going to have to stop you, and he said it over and over again, and I think this actually probably went on about 45 seconds more than it needed to, and yeah, the Mergliotta came in, waved it off. Harris was obviously distraught. Overeem, the professional that he is, went over and gave Walt Harris a lot of love. I just think that Harris shouldn't have come back yet. I don't think he was mentally ready for this. Fair play to him, he wants to provide for his family, but yeah, I think we would have seen a different result had Harris not had to go through what he'd gone through. I mean, he didn't look fit enough. He put on a lot of weight. There was even the commentators were saying that he actually had to cut weight to make the limit for the division, which is something you don't really see a lot of in the heavyweight division. It's only the likes of Roy Nelson and Mark Hunt who usually have to drop weight to get in that division. And Harris, he looked a shell of his former self, and it's totally understandable. It's just that he shouldn't have taken this fight. But fair play to both guys. It was a cracking fight and a great victory again for Overeem.
Definitely. Like I was saying, fair play to Walt Harris for coming back now. Like I say, I don't think it was the right time to come back, but that's his choice. And it looked like, in the fight, it looked like, fair enough, He still had his stepdaughter on his mind a lot. Now you can't kick a man whilst he's down, because who wouldn't have, especially in that circumstances.
It's also illegal in the outcome.
You know what I mean? But you can't blame him for thinking about his stepdaughter in that time. But if you walk into the octagon and you don't want to be fighting on especially such a sensitive emotion like that, walking it to the octagon, and especially against a guy who's not only just a legend in the heavyweight division, but just a legend in mixed martial art for his time in Pride, for his time in Strikeforce, with K1 bouts, for his training with the likes of Bas Root. And this guy, he's got so much time and so many rounds in the octagon and in the ring and in the gym, that little mistakes he'll capitalise on. When Walt Harris went forward and hurt Overeem, I thought to myself, shit, this is going to work for him, he's hurt him, he's going to finish him here now. But he put too much effort in. Now, I agree when Dana said, like, when he was doing the media conference thing, he basically said, Walt Harris goes back and watches the tape, he'll understand sort of what he did wrong there. And I think he's professional enough to understand that he did do wrong there by rushing too much forward and trying to finish him so quick and just gassing himself out. And Overeem did well to weather the storm and being able to capitalise on Harris gassing out. And I know a lot of people are going to be like, well, no shit when I say this, but when you're going against up a guy like Alistair Overeem, especially throwing kicks, he'll capitalise on him, simple as that. And Walt Harris, when he was walking forward, it was just the sloppiest front kick I saw, and that's what Alistair Overeem were able to capitalise on, when he were able to grab the heel and basically push him over. Yeah, that's what Alistair Overeem were able to use to capitalise on. And Walt Harris just didn't have the answer to Alistair Overeem when he took the back of Walt Harris and just raining down shots. He just didn't know what to do in that like situation. And
no.
You've got to give it to Dan Mergliotta. Some people might say, come on, what were he doing? He was basically watching stars. That fight could have been stopped sooner. But you've got to give it to Alistair. He was professional enough to not Them shots could have come in harder. I definitely could have come in harder off Alistair Overeem.
Yeah, he was doing enough to make Dan Murdoch to stop the fight rather than him pounding Walt Harris out.
Well, that's exactly it. And for me, that's the most respectful thing I have saw someone do in a long time in the UFC. And that's he could have rained down a lot more shots. He could have rained down elbows, and he chose not to. He chose just to get them rabbit punches off, because he already knew he already knew he had Walt Harris flattened out.
Yeah.
He already knew Walt Harris was gassed to fuck, and he knew that Walt Harris didn't have the energy to like posture up and try and like scramble and get back to his feet.
Yeah.
And Dan Murdoch gave Walt Harris enough. He said to him, defend yourself a good 4 or 5 times, and it gave him the opportunity to get back to his feet. And Alistair, like I said, he weren't doing much damage. He weren't doing like intensive care damage from where he punched his brain. It was just little rabbit punches to show Dan Murdoch that, look, he might be defending, but he's not. In that circumstances, that's why it were a TKO instead of a knockout, because even though Walt Harris were defending himself, he's back with that. There was nothing possibly he could do in that situation bar from put his hand over his head and lie there and just take the little rabbit punches from Alistair Overeem until Alistair Overeem decided to start dropping elbows, heavier shots, or until what we saw Dan Murdoch step in and stop the fight.
Yeah.
That's how they score the TKO knockouts, and especially in them circumstances. But you've got to give it to Alistair Overeem of being so respectful after the bout. As soon as that bout were ended, he just... I'm curious to hear what he basically said to Walt Harris after the fight, but just the amount of respect shown for Walt Harris... he's just amazing on Alistair Overeem's part.
Yeah, absolutely. So, no UFC, that's the end of the trilogy. No UFC now for a couple of weeks, back on the 6th of June, and they've fleshed out the card a little bit more now, so there's been 5 fights announced already. So we've got Alonzo Mayfield taking on Devin Clark, Alex Perez versus Formiga in the flyweights, Ian Hinch taking on Gerald Merschot, that'll be a banger of a fight. Charles Byrd against Maki Pitolo, and then that main event, the goat of goats in that women's MMA scene, Amanda Nunes taking on Felicia Spencer. That's going to be a big, big battle. So yeah, come back and check out what we think about that. So yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. Follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos. Follow the show at 5 Rounds Pod. Thank you all for listening, and that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.